by introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi, and welcome back to Amazing FBA with your host, Michael Veazey. This is episode number 7, and today we're dealing with sourcing. This is the second part of the episodes to do with sourcing and getting products from China, because it's quite a big area, so I've tried to break it down so that it doesn't overload your brain. The first thing to do is to go back over the stuff that we did in the last episode. So if you didn't catch it, episode number 3 is the start of the now 10-part system, the Amazing FBA startup system, or Amazon startup business system, whatever you want to call it. I'm still refining the name, and it's expanded slightly from an original 5 to 7 to 10 parts, just so I break it down a bit more in detail, but without blowing your mind. So the last episode, episode number 6, dealt with the overall process of suppliers and filing them on Alibaba.com. And if you want to listen to that, just go to amazingfba.com/6. So each episode is simply amazingfba.com/ and whichever number it is. So episode 6 is number 6. So episode 7. I wanted to go into a little bit more detail about your first contact with your initial contact with suppliers, and specifically an email template. And then I'll talk a bit about setting up warehousing in the USA to receive your products, which is one of those things we have to deal with being UK-based sellers selling in the US. Then we'll talk about samples, inspection in China if you can arrange it, and then designers and receiving products and negotiation over your products. So there's quite a lot to deal with. So let's get cracking. Okay, so the first thing I want to deal with in detail is your first email to suppliers. I realized that I left things a little bit open in the last episode. So I think the first thing you're going to want to do is create a good quality email template and then copy and paste. And if you can do it in one or two work sessions if possible, and contact pretty much all the suppliers you're going to contact, that's more efficient. It keeps things moving. And especially if you're working this business very much part-time as I did, the main thing to avoid is two things. Number one, doing things in a bitty way because you forget what you were doing and you have to remind yourself and refind your files and reopen certain programs on your computer and refine bits of paper you made notes on, etc. Much better to batch things and do things efficiently in one sitting if you possibly can. The other thing is that you want to avoid too much back and forth with suppliers. There's going to be a degree of that. And in fact, I would argue it's important to do a certain amount of that to create a bit of rapport. If you just say to somebody, hello, do you supply your product? And they say yes. And you say, okay, 500 units at $2 a pop. And they say, okay, it's efficient, but it doesn't create much of a relationship. And I think it is important to create that, particularly in Chinese business culture. But having said that, you don't want to have ongoing back and forth with 20 different suppliers. You want to get it down to 2, 3, maybe 4, 5 suppliers maximum. 3 is a kind of sweet spot, really, like in many things in life. 3 possibilities is good. So when you first contact your 20 suppliers, as I said, get an email template, copy and paste. Do it in one go if you can. Now, here's what I think you need in your email template. First of all, I think there's an overall language and structure that you need to follow. And then there's certain questions which you'll find will minimize back and forth, which I've refined it to over, you know, quite a lot of contacts now with Chinese suppliers. So the first thing is try and address the supplier contact by name if you have one. If you're going through the Alibaba.com central messaging system, then be sure to give your email address and ask them to contact you outside of the Alibaba system, because otherwise you have to keep going on Alibaba.com and it's a very kind of confusing environment. I think you want to get it back to your own email space as soon as you can. The next thing you want to do is come across as the buying manager or purchasing agent or procurement agent for your business, whatever that is, your business.com company. I think that's important. Don't start saying anything like, oh, I'm just starting selling on Amazon. I just thought I'd get in touch. Don't be too casual about it. Just sound structured and experienced. You don't need to lie, but they don't necessarily get fooled by this either. But if you come across as a total newbie who doesn't know what on earth they're doing, they may well not bother responding to you because you might waste their time, and they have an awful lot of people contact them every day. Come across as businesslike and organized. So use simple language, but don't use slang. Especially slang's not a good idea when you're dealing with a foreign language speaker anyway, because they won't understand slang. So keep it very simple, but don't use slang. Keep sentences short. But on the other hand, format it all properly with capitals, check the spelling, make the layout neat, your suppliers may not come back to you in such a formal way, and that's okay, that's their business. But the more professionally you come across with all the little details that we're going to add in here, the better response you're going to get and the better they're going to treat you, basically. Now, the other thing is that you want to ask these questions along with numbering, and I'll go over the questions in a second, which will help you avoid back and forth. And you want to sign off with a good company signature that includes your title, for example, buying manager. Best not to come across as managing director, because you want to have, or CEO, but managing director is actually the title they're used to, probably because they've got a background with British business culture sometimes, particularly if they're Hong Kong based. If you come across as the CEO or the chief, the boss, then you've got nobody to go back to and argue with. Whereas if you say I'm the buying manager, you can always claim that you need to go and negotiate with somebody in higher authority. And bear in mind, as we talked about last podcast, that the Chinese very much have a hierarchical view of business and life. So it's very natural for them, for you to want to go back to a boss and negotiate with them. And they'll play the same game on you. So you might as well play the game. So have a title like that. Then you want your full name, company website address. We talked about registering that in episode 4, I think it was. Then if you've registered a company, put your company registered address and registered company number and a contact telephone number. I would suggest that if you have a US a number, which we talked about last time, getting a US Skype number in place for your customer service. We talked about that in episode 5, where you set up on Seller Central. And if you haven't listened to that, that might be worth doing. Then you probably also want a separate phone number for your business. You could use your cell phone or mobile number. You could use your home number, but I think it's very unlikely to be very professional. I think it's better to separate your business from your other personal or freelance work. So in that case, I would just buy a Skype number for use in the UK. Again, try and make it match your address or your company's address. I live in London. I have a London-based Skype number, and that just looks a bit more professional as well. Okay, then we come to the specific questions you want to ask your suppliers in the email. First and foremost, you want to ask them, can you private label? The Chinese call that OEM, so you can just use the phrase OEM if you like. If they can't, then you're going to want to walk away, because the essence of this business model is private labeling. So it's good to find a manufacturer who will supply you product straight away that is unprivate labeled, if you like, and that has got their own branding, because you can get that out into the marketplace quickly and find whether it's going to sell. But the end game is always going to be to get it private labeled. So if they can't do that, just walk away. Then ask them if they do samples, how much they cost, and how long it takes to receive samples. Again, if it's going to take them a month to get you samples, just walk away, because time is money and it's really important to keep the process moving. Another question you want to ask them is, do you accept PayPal for samples? Now, a lot of Chinese suppliers aren't very happy with PayPal, because they end up paying the costs of the PayPal, which I think is about 4% charge. Now, I would personally just offer to pay for that and overcome that barrier. The first thing is to ask that question, though, and then you can negotiate about that later down the line. Also, do you accept PayPal for orders? Again, because of the 4% surcharge, a lot of suppliers will be very unhappy with that, but PayPal's quick and it gives you buyer protection. So, and it's very, very simple compared to other systems and methods. So it's always good to ask them if they do offer that as a bonus. If they don't, if they say no initially, still worth negotiating with them. But this is just your initial email, so you just want to get it out there for now. Then, do you use DHL, FedEx, or UPS for delivery? If they use some obscure courier that you've never heard of, I'd walk away. I did have a supplier who used DHL twice with no problems at all, and then you, for some reason, to do with typhoons in China and some delay, took it upon himself to find a random Chinese freight company I'd never heard of, and it created lots of problems with customs. So don't go with anyone who does anything odd like that. DHL, FedEx, UPS, they're fine. Other things I just wouldn't touch. Then you want to ask a couple more questions. How much is the cost of delivered door-to-door to your warehouse address in the USA for 200 pieces? How much for 500 pieces? A few things to explain here. First of all, they use the word pieces in China as a substitute for units. It means the same thing, but you might as well speak their language. PCS is also an abbreviation they use for pieces, so don't be fooled if you see that. Secondly, a door-to-door basically means that they'll deliver it from the factory door to wherever you ask for in the USA, which normally means that they will deal with most things except for customs, right? So that means they're dealing with freight in the USA, which is good. You don't want to be dealing with that. DDU is the technical term, which means deliver duty unpaid, which means you've got to deal with customs. If you can get them to deliver it DDP, which means deliver duty paid, which includes customs clearance and customs duty, that's great, but most suppliers won't go for that. So ask for DDU/door-to-door. And the reason we're asking for 200 pieces and 500 pieces, that's just an example. It depends on how much you're paying per sample, per unit, I should say, sorry. But if you're paying, for example, say $2 a unit, 500 units is a very typical order, so it's $1,000 of product. But you could ask them for two prices. One is the sort of standard amount you'd expect, say 500 pieces. The other one is a lower one, just to see if they will deal with lower quantities. In the past, I've tried asking for multiple different levels of unit prices, but quite understandably, because that's going to take them too much work, they don't bother responding. So I've asked for, so how much for 100 pieces, how much for 200, how much for 500, how much for 1,000, etc. Normally doesn't work, but if you ask for two prices, you will normally get two prices back. So that's another point. And then two important questions about timescale, which is really crucial when it comes to China, because it can be quite an elongated process, manufacturing and freight. So how many days between us paying deposit and you finishing manufacturing? That's the manufacturing lead time. It's best to ask that particular question rather than just saying, oh, what's your manufacturing lead time? Because that gives them lots of wiggle room. And how can I put this? The Chinese will tend to take advantage of whatever vagaries or wiggle room or vagueness come up with an answer that you want to hear up front, and then down the line you'll find out that they were just kind of fudging the issue slightly, just put it politely. So be specific. How many days between us paying deposit and you finishing manufacturing? Or rather, a better question, even thinking about it, might be how many days between you receiving deposit, because it could take a few days to get across the globe to transfer the money, and you finishing manufacturing. And then the other important question is how many days between shipping the product from your factory and receiving the product in the USA. Again, that's kind of out of their control, but they will be booking couriers that they know, like DHL or FedEx, so they will have a good idea from experience of that, so they can tell you. So you get an idea of the time scale, because really time is money in this business as much as any other business. So now you've dealt with that email, I'll put that in writing on the blog, because it's going to be a little bit hard for you to remember, but I think it's good for you to hear me speak it through as well. Now, we've got to talk about setting up a warehouse in the USA. This is an important extra step that we have to have if we're shipping to the USA from China, but you're personally based in the UK, because obviously you can't get it shipped to your house to inspect it yourself. You could, in theory, get the Chinese supplier to ship directly from their factory to an address that Amazon will give you of their warehouses. And Amazon kind of will choose, once you create a shipping plan, which is down the line for us in this process, they will tell you where the exact addresses are of the warehouses that the goods are to be sent to. So you can do that. I've heard of people doing it. However, I totally advise against it, because the big issue with China is that the price is cheap. They're reasonably quick to get around to manufacturing. They can manufacture in bulk, but the quality control is not always guaranteed. So at some point in your process, you will want to have inspection. That includes not just when it's been manufactured, but to take account of the fact that sometimes they can have a rough voyage across the sea. When I say across the sea, I mean in an aircraft, but it's still rough potentially, and it can damage the whole process of getting loaded, unloaded, put onto forklift trucks, etc. Can damage the packaging. If you send a lot of damaged packaging in to Amazon, there are two bad results. One is that Amazon will count that as a defect, and they will keep track of such things, and they will not like it, and they will potentially punish you for that. And then the other thing is, of course, that damaged packaging might make its way through the Amazon system to your customers, and they will again be very unhappy and quite likely give you bad reviews, which is the number one thing you want to avoid really in this entire business. So I suggest you have to send it into a warehouse, at least initially. Once you've used a supplier for a while, you might trust them to send it directly to Amazon, but not as a newbie. Okay, so the next thing you want to do is set up a warehouse in the USA then. So there are two basic options that I've used. There are probably many other things out there, and I will be exploring it soon, so I'll keep you up to date if I find anything better. Here's one that's FBA inspection, which was used by a hell of a lot of people early on in the days of the second and third installment, or ASM2, ASM3 of Amazing Selling Machine. They're based in California, which is near LAX, which is LA main airport for freight, which is a good thing. However, they are based up in the mountains somewhere, so there was a possibility of damage to your goods when they're on their way to FBA inspection, which is ironic because one of the reasons sending them there was to check for damage in transit or in manufacture. The other thing is that they put their prices up quite a while ago. For those reasons, I moved over to somebody else. But the advantage of FBA inspection is they're obviously specifically geared to FBA and Amazon's requirements. So at least you know that they are expert. So the other people that I've used are Earth Class Mail. They're based in Portland, Oregon, near the port of Portland and near the freight airport. So they're quite close to the ports. So the speed is good and the damage potentially to your goods on the way between the port and the inspection warehouse is pretty limited. It was quite cost effective. However, they have recently done a massive price hike. So in order to use their services now, instead of paying $25 a month, you had to pay $100 a month as a sort of basic membership fee. And then they did have labor costs at $35 an hour, which is kind of par for the course, but on the higher side is now gone up to $80. Exactly when that's effective, I'm not sure. But if you're listening to this in late August, when I'm broadcasting on the 28th of August 2015, then they probably implemented that. So I have switched from FBA Inspection, who did a reasonable job, I thought, and their communication was good, to Earth Class Mail, who did a moderately good job on communication, but their quality of work was good. I'm probably going to have to switch back to FBA Inspection or find somebody new. So I will keep you posted, but I can't, in all honesty, recommend Earth Class Mail right at this point. But you do need to find some inspection and warehousing receiving facility. So you need to get that set up before you can get a meaningful quote of the cost of delivered duty unpaid from China to your destination in the USA. That's why you have to get this set up at this stage. If it's a block to you and you're worried about it, just pick one of those two and use that to get your prices. You can always change that later down the line, right? But you basically need to get a realistic quote. So go online, Google Earth Class Mail, or I'll put it in the show notes anyway, or FBA Inspection, pick one of those and use that as your destination in the USA for the purpose of getting quotes for freight. And then don't worry about it further for now if it's going to block you. Keep moving forward, keep the momentum going. Okay, so once you've set yourself up with a warehousing of some kind and you can therefore get good quotes and you've got quotes and you find a supplier, you've gone back and forth a bit, you find a supplier whose communication is good. By the way, as I suggested before, you want to use Skype for that. You want to get samples sent. Don't fuss about a $30 to $80 cost per sample. Just get that as a cost of doing business. If you're not willing to spend $30 on a sample now, then you certainly aren't going to be willing to spend several hundred or several thousand dollars on actual inventory. So get over it and pay the money, okay? Don't fuss about that. I would get at least one sample per manufacturer, so it means you need a minimum of three samples per keyword. So if you are, for example, looking for silicon spatulas, you want to get at least three samples from three separate manufacturers of silicon spatulas. If you're also wanting to get other samples for other keywords, which is not a bad idea if you think you want a backup product in case this one won't work, for example, I don't know, slotted spoons, then you're going to need to budget $30 to $80 per each one of those as well. So I would budget a healthy amount for samples. It's a really important part of market research, as it were, or supplier research. It's kind of finalizing your research process. So don't be tight about that with your money. Spend the money now, and then you'll know up front what the quality is you're dealing with, which is really, really crucial. If they will accept PayPal for this, then offer to pay their costs. If there's some kind of resistance from them, which, as I say, is about 4%, so instead of $30, you'll pay $32. I have no idea, but it's peanuts, so just pay it. If they weren't, then just pay by wire transfer for now. Don't worry about sending $30, $50, $80 abroad. If you lose it, you lose it. That's peanuts, really, in the wider scheme of things. Just get it done. Now, meanwhile, while you're waiting for the samples to arrive, I think you need to find an inspection agent in China that's near enough to your chosen manufacturer. You might need to wait until your samples are through and you've actually chosen your manufacturer. but it can be an elongated process. So you need to get started with that now. Personal contacts are the best. I personally got a contact via somebody I knew in a company that deals with procurement themselves. I work for a very big company I can't name because I haven't got their permission. But that's obviously really good. If you look through your business contacts or your sort of personal contacts, you'll quite likely find somebody who works in procurement. And if they buy anything in bulk, it's quite likely they'll deal with China. You can talk to freight forwarders. And again, you might well find that you make contact with those through somebody who works in that kind of industry, in the procurement or buying industry. Bear in mind, pretty much any major corporation has a buying department. So it's not an obscure job you're looking for here. There are going to be lots of people who do that. But another simple way is talk to other Amazon sellers with some experience. I, for example, have somebody who does inspection for us in the Guangdong area in China, which is a city of about 10 million, which isn't a million miles away from Hong Kong. But I'm always looking for people to deal with if there's a factory near Shanghai, for example, that we use where I don't yet have inspection. Again, it's not an absolute must because you can always get inspection done in the USA. However, it has two very big plus points to have inspection built into your Chinese side of things. First of all, your supplier knows that you're going to make it conditional upon inspection that you pay them the remainder of their money. For example, if you put a 30% deposit down, let's say you're ordering 500 units that cost $2 each, you're going to say, right, I'm going to pay, and let's say they're also paying for the freight delivered duty unpaid to FBA inspection in California, right? So let's say that's going to cost, by the way, a rule of thumb would be about $7 to $8 a kilogram for that. It could be a little bit less. Let's say that's going to cost a further $1,000, right? Could be less. Then you're overall going to pay them $2,000. So you give them 30% up front, which is going to be $600. If you make it conditional upon your successful inspection, that the goods have to pass inspection before you will pay the 70% deposit, i.e. the remaining $1,400, then your Chinese supplier has much bigger incentive to get the quality control right up front. And then the other thing is that you have not spent a lot of money on freight shipping defective units all the way across from China to the USA, only to have it inspected at your warehouse and then discover that they're defective. Because obviously, ideally, you want to get rid of defective things earlier in the supply chain instead of paying for having them shipped all around the globe. Yeah, having said that, that may not be possible when you're new. You may not have found enough people or made enough contacts yet to have inspection possibilities in China, in which case, get on with it, but just make sure you are going to have some inspection at some point in your supply chain, and that's going to have to be at your warehouse in the USA. So assuming you've now ordered your samples, then you're going to have to wait a little bit of time for them to come through. It might be about a week. You can still keep the process moving at this point, and it's good to keep the process moving. I made the mistake of trying to do things one thing at a time, which is not a bad idea, but actually because of the time frame, once you're dealing with China to do with samples and certainly manufacturing, you need to keep the rest of the processes moving forward while you can. So while you're waiting for a sample, I'd suggest you do a couple of things. First of all, you can go back to your research and refine it. Put your main keyword in for your most likely product, for example, silicon spatula, and check the positive and the negative reviews for rival products. The negative reviews will tell you what issues or what features they don't have, which they should have, and what the positive reviews will tell you the things that help it sell. So you want to look through that and really think about how you can address those issues. You may want to go back to the manufacturer once you've received your sample as well and address those things. Look at the search results through shoppers' eyes and try and think about differentiating your product from everything else out there. So look at the competitive landscape on the search results page. For example, if you put in the keyword silicon spatula, look at the photos and the immediate impression. Are several of the products pretty much exactly the same model? I mean, that's certainly true in one market I was in. And looking back now, I probably should have found something that was a little bit more differentiated. What's the price? Is there big price differences? Is one product just selling on price? If it's near the top, is it just because it's cheaper? Or are there some products that are selling at quite a high price, but are also selling good volume? And that's obviously the area you want to be in because that's where the profit is. And then, of course, the number of reviews and average review. Again, just be rechecking that competitive landscape and thinking, can I take position 2, 3, 4 on page one? And if so, what sort of price am I likely to be selling at based on my rival's price and the number of reviews they have, which is one very simple way of gauging the competition, but it actually is pretty realistic on Amazon. broadly speaking, I've found that if something is pretty much the same as another product from the point of view of the photographs, it all comes down to the number of reviews and the price. It's very simple. So look at that and just rethink your approach while you've got this opportunity to, you know, look back over your initial research decisions. If the first product's not looking absolute humdinger and not absolute cert, then you might want to go for the second most likely product and repeat that process. And if it looks really promising, you might actually want to consider ordering samples of this too, and in fact going and doing some research, because it's true that at some point you're going to want more than one product live, right? You're going to want several different 4, 5, 6, up to 10 products in one marketplace. Or in fact, you might want to go crazy and develop a massive business and with hundreds of products for all I know. But certainly you're going to want to have several. It depends on how long the sample is going to take to be manufactured and get to you. Delivery time is probably going to be about a week from China to the UK. In my experience, maybe 5 days if you're lucky. Manufacturing lead times for samples can be zero, as in they've got it and ready off the shelf, to 2 weeks or something. So you may have enough time to go into quite some detail and research a second potential product. I wouldn't get too involved in that unless your first product's looking a little bit dodgy. So that's a decision you have to make based on the individual case, really. At this stage also, you're going to want to find a designer to deal with the packaging and logo. Personal recommendation's good, and that's what I went with. Actually, I just knew a designer who'd worked with a photographer who's a very old friend of mine, so I just simply went with that. Other people have had good results with 99designs.com. Fiverr.com, again, is another place to start. It's cheap. Whether the quality is as good, I don't know, but I haven't got personal experience of that, so I can't talk very much in personal experience. But you will have to get quite involved with your designer, so it is important that if they're not an English native speaker, that their English is good. You'll also want to go back to the Chinese supplier and get a template for their packaging. I would suggest that you use their standard packaging, but with your design. It's possible to go to separate packaging factories. Yeah, you could in theory get separate packaging, and going forward, I am going to do that with probably all of my products to give an extra perceived value. But to start with, it's just an additional complication. I suggest you stick with the manufacturer's standard packaging. However, you put your own design on it. So that means the designer needs to know the dimensions and every possible thing about that. The standard, just a very quick thing on design, the standard thing in the West that designers use, the standard package is an Adobe Illustrator. So they want a so-called vector file, which is an AI file, right? So that's the ideal thing that they have to work off. Sometimes the Chinese do and don't work with that. So you will want to get the best thing then is get a PDF, or even when you get your sample sent through, if you have to wait for that, you'll be able to measure the packaging by hand with a ruler. I've done that in the past if it's needed. But try and get that stuff done while you're waiting for the sample to come through so you can keep the whole process moving. You're also going to want to look for a photographer. Obviously, you don't have a product to photograph yet, but you do not want to be using the manufacturer's original photographs unless you're really about speed and never mind the quality. Quality of photos on Amazon is really important. Manufacturer's products shots are normally a little bit basic, and also they come with a load of what I believe it's called metadata or tags. I'm not quite sure, but in some way anyway, a cunning Amazon rival can take the data from that photo and reverse engineer directly back to know who your manufacturer is, which is not helpful because it's really helping your rivals to buy the same products easily. So in short, you want to do your own photographs, and you don't have the product yet, but you can go and at least find a photographer. Again, you can go to 99designs.com or People Per Hour or some other such site. Again, I can't say that I've done that process. Again, I knew somebody personally I've known for years, and I know he does product photography professionally for Tesco's and other such big companies. So I simply went to him. Not cheap, but I knew that he was reliable, that we'd be able to discuss things if we needed to, which we did, and that the quality of the end result would be really good. And good quality photos are important, so don't be too cheapskate about your photography. You don't need to pay through the nose. I paid about £150 the last photo shoot we did. That's probably a little bit more than you have to pay, but it was a very good quality result, so that's a worthwhile investment. Okay, so then the next thing is that you receive the sample, check the quality carefully, use it hard, you know, put it through its paces, and if it's something you wouldn't pay your target price for, then reject it. Don't mess about with this, because your consumers will be very vocal in their disapproval on Amazon if they don't like it, and on Amazon disapproval results in one-star reviews and trashing your reputation very quickly. Having said that, be sensible about it. If you're paying $2 for a widget, don't expect it to be the best thing in the world, right? I mean, if you can sell it for $15 and you'd be happy to pay $15, i.e. about £10, great. If you think it is a piece of junk, do not touch it and just go back to square one. And if you have to reject all three of your samples, then restart the process, then do so. You know, that's just life. But in this case, you might want to go back and order even more samples and go for your second choice product. For example, if you had silicon spatula as your first choice product, you might want to go for slotted spoon as well in order to keep the process really moving forwards. Assuming that one of your products is acceptable, then you need to start negotiating the final MOQ, that is the minimum order quantity, price, the payment terms, and the delivery terms. In order to stop this podcast becoming excessively long, I'm going to split the rest of the information out into the third part of the podcast that's about sourcing and supply. So in the meantime, you've got plenty to get on with. Good luck with it all, and get out there, take action, come back to me with any questions. Just go to amazingfba.com/ask. And in the meantime, best of luck. See you in the next episode.